Terrorism, journalism, hypnotism, terrorism. Where's the wisdom? Wisdom. They attacked the nations in Africa, made them catch their man-made AIDS with polio vaccinations, and they drive their Mitsubishis. Belief in mystic genius and watch on TV distracts us from another Lisbon treaty. Planet permissions, this planet's position, brainwashed with religion to accept their fascist decisions. People panicking, no paladin, no patron scene, battling to stay awake, pineal gland cluttered by what's in our water as a Celtic warrior, breaking every barrier. I was surprised when I realized if you believe a lie, then you can fill a lie detector like an actor in a park. Society's a stage, and the masters of the art are the laughter in the dark. Rest assured, we will not be terrorized, and this revolution will not be televised. What? Is Lucifer Jupiter? It's safe to say that many men have been murdered, including William Cooper, for gritting their teeth and killing the seeds of evil. These people scatter on the cross of false religious belief. It's not gonna stop by watching Top of the Pops. We need to bring change to this establishment, but not with the trunk of a box, cause the ones at the top that are calling the shots think they've got it all locked. But my passion is burning like a Molotov cocktail, and my will to fight is still strong as an ox. Honest to God, habits make a mind state, and if you cut jobs and raise drug prices, it raises the crime rate. Freedom of speech means I can teach about the priest's reason to preach a fallacy that has me breathing the leaf of tobacco plants. But the truth is, there shouldn't be a they controlling each other. It's made the mess we see today.
To see past the secrets, to know what to really be free is.
I still have a dream.
I know you can't see this, but people, you got to believe it.
I still have a dream.
The secrets to know what to really be free is, so be it.
I still have a dream.
We need to rise up.
This nation will rise up.
Global terror is here, but we're all blinded. Chameleon governments hold info, so we don't know they're behind it. Bright media light shine in all of our eyes. Wrong the educated, exaggerate the problems of mankind. Now there's violence around us, no escaping its founders. Rebellion, martial law, and then they'll appoint us. Got a pain in my leg, must be my FEMA. Black blood being spilled over
Oscar Mary Lee.
How can we just sit back and let this all happen? Like guards at the gate that got caught out napping. I invented a cure for cancer using radio waves, replacing chemical placebos with herbal remedies. Who let the dogs out? It turned into swine flu. It wasn't on the news, cause it wasn't supposed to. This is expressing revolutionary lyrical art. I'm Irish through and through, and I've got fire in my heart. I'm a soldier, I told you. Bend you, then fold you. Knowledge is my burden, got a lot on my shoulders. Don't shoot the messenger, stay away, I'm telling you. Listen if you like, but I'm not gonna yell at you. Blinded with money, I'm going green with envy. This corporate world fucking tormenty. Do you sometimes feel weak and empty? Do you think TV is there to help you? Working, sleeping, drinking, but nobody's living. Lab rats in the maze is the life we've been given. Hold up, I think I'm gonna sneeze. Did I say zeitgeist? Oops, there, I said it twice. Nice.
911,
yeah, this is a prank. My name is George Frank, and I work at the bank. I'll tell you everything, then I gotta catch a flight. I want this all in the open.
I still have a dream.
To see past the secrets, to know what to really be free is.
I still have a dream.
I know you can't see this, but people, you got to believe it.
I still have a dream.
The secrets to know what to really be free is, so be it.
I still have a dream.
We need to rise up.
This nation will rise up.
Cannabis places will rattle your cages. Truth like hot rocks burning holes in the pages. I'm working so hard, trying to change tomorrow. I'm a fucking revolutionary like I'm Che Guevara. They try to use statutes to catch you, but I contemplate bargain on the gospel of Mark. Making me swear on the book that preaches equality. I came from the clay, so you can't put laws on me. 8,000 years of Celtic mythology. I demand an apology. This farce makes a mockery.
Inherently and historic, opposed to secret societies, the secret oath, and the secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it. And there is very grave danger that it announced need for increased security. will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And good evening and welcome to Out of the Bag. This is Sean Maguire live on People's Internet Radio. That's www.peoplesinternetradio.com, where we are seeking solutions. And I have a packed show for you tonight. I really do. And no more has Muggsy the Jux, I Have a Dream, been more important than tonight, when we will first of all be talking to Ollie Damagard very soon. And his news on, well, revelations, if you like, and I'm looking forward to listening to it, on the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Did James Earl Ray really do it? Well, let's hear about it. And I'm really looking forward to talking to Ollie very, very soon. And I have him actually lined up as we speak, so I'll be as quick as I can. Later on, at about 10 o'clock, I'll have Joe Ducey, basically the members of the Anti-Corruption Task Force, will be joining me. Joe Ducey, Colin Granahan, possibly Gary Beatty. And also we will be talking to Rosary O'Donoghue. I know Rosary O'Donoghue has a 20-year corruption story which is going to share with us tonight. So make sure you're around from the 10 o'clock mark onwards. And then later on, I have an amazing bit of positivity to give you. After 2 hours of possibly heavy stuff, as they say, I'm going to be talking about Coppo's 50th birthday bash. Who is Coppo? Simon Copston. He's a good friend. Well, we've seen him a few times at Rebellion a couple of times, and he's definitely an old punk rocker out there. But he's organised an incredible gig for his 50th birthday bash in the 100 Club with some amazing bands, Department S, Lee Harvey's, loads of bands. I'm going to be talking about that, talking to him, hopefully, if he calls me in, he calls into the show, and tell you about the charity that these punks get together and raise money for. It's a really, really good thing. So just before I came on the show, I was actually attacked quite dramatically by a guy called John Duan. If anybody knows him, please have a word. He's telling me that I am a Zionist, I am an elitist shill, and that my bank accounts are being really, really filled by the shows I do. Well, you tell me about that. Anyway, without further ado, that's John Duane, by the way. John, D-U-A-N-E. Please check him out. I had to block him on Facebook, but hey, please check him out. He apparently is telling everyone, I'm stinking rich. Great stuff. Anyway, on with the show, and I want to introduce onto the show, onto Out of the Bag, again, it's been a while, Ollie Damagard. Are you with me?
I sure am.
Hiya, Ollie. How you doing? Just been attacked before coming on, so I apologise about my sort of het upness.
No, I was just called an anti-Semite yesterday, so join the gang.
Well, apparently I'm a Zionist with loads of money.
Well, congratulations. That's a pretty good position in the world today.
Fantastic. I'll be sponsoring you and doing all sorts in the future with all the good work you're doing, Ollie. But listen, it's been a while. We've all had the shock of Ken O'Keefe and Zen and all that stuff going on, but we won't talk about any of that tonight, Ollie. We've only got an hour with you, and thank you so much for allowing the second hour, because we were going to have 2 hours to be able for the Anti-Corruption Task Force here with a lot going on in Ireland. So I want to thank you and pass on my thanks from them also to you, Ollie.
No, my absolute pleasure.
So where do we start? So I suppose after having I Have a Dream, my theme tune, Martin Luther King Jr., you have news, revelations, possibility?
God, yeah, I think in an hour you're going to sit with your head in your hands just shaking it.
Okay, I think. Okay.
I must say it was amazing to hear this song in the beginning of the show with both JFK and Martin Luther King, since these are two of the people I focused so much attention on over the years, trying to expose and solve the mysteries behind their deaths. And I think especially Martin Luther King, since he was, I believe, one of the most beautiful souls that have been around. I mean, a man of absolute integrity and courage, and also, unfortunately, dying for what he stood for. Mm. But in the beginning, you ask, are we going to find out if James Earl Ray was the assassin? The thing is, I don't think there's many people that know that there was actually a court case in December 1999 where Dr. William Pepper, the lawyer that was representing the King family, put forward a civil wrongful death suit against one of the people involved in the assassination of Dr. King. His name was Lord Jowers. And they call in over the a period of 30 days, they call in 70 witnesses. There's more than 4,000 pages of transcripts from the with evidence and much, much more. The jury came back in 59 minutes and their decision totally exonerating James Earl Ray. But unfortunately, he had already died in prison. But all the evidence showed that there was a conspiracy to kill King, including J. Edgar Hoover from the FBI, Richard Helms from the CIA, the military, the Memphis Police Department, and organized crime. It is more or less the exact same power structure as behind JFK, Robert Kennedy, and quite a lot of other assassinations as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it is actually, I would humbly suggest that we're looking at the same team being pulled together, the same people that took out JFK, the same people on the street level, more or less, they appear here in this case as well. And just to, if I can go back in history a little and also remind people about that, there was only around 60 days in total between the assassination of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. Mm-hmm. So these two were very, very close in time.
Yes, yeah. And Robert Kennedy's speech immediately after the assassination of Martin Luther King was quite dramatic too, wasn't it?
I wouldn't say so, but I mean, everybody was shocked big time, and there was a lot of people thinking that there was a great possibility of Robert Kennedy being elected as president. That was why they took him out in the Ambassador Hotel. But that he would have elected Martin Luther King as vice president. And I tell you, these two people, had they come to these positions, the world would have looked very different than it does today.
We would be living in a no war zone, wouldn't we? I mean, they planned to end wars and to stop all the trivial bullshit that was going on.
And that's why they died.
Indeed.
But if I can go back in time and just, since we only have an hour, I was going to focus on how this was carried out, not put a lot of attention on James Earl Ray, who's in court been freed from all accusations and was only the patsy, the perfect patsy for this whole thing. So I would prefer to focus on how this whole thing was carried out, who was involved, who was the shooter, how Martin Luther King actually died, because he did not die on that balcony outside the Lorraine Motel, as we've been told. He actually died later.
Okay.
And, I would like just to take you back in time, because this was a very, very intense time in the U.S. history. There was a lot of riots going on. There was almost civil war at the same time as the whole rock explosion was going on, the whole LSD and the hippie revolution and love revolution and all of these things at the same time. So very, very much going on in a very short period of time. But the reason why Martin Luther King was being targeted was that in the speech that we just heard, I Have a Dream, at that point in time, this was in around 64 when he received the Nobel Peace Prize. At that time, he was totally focused on integration, a peaceful integration, blacks and whites in the U.S., but also very much civil rights, equal rights for everyone.
Yeah, it was equality but, right across the board he was looking for, wasn't it?
Yep, sure. But then in 67, that changed when he suddenly took a very strong stand against the Vietnam War. And anyone who's looked into the JFK assassination will be aware of that this is one of the major forces behind the assassination, just the whole to keep the whole war going, the whole drug pipeline going into the States and so on. So the whole war machine was very, very threatened when somebody as popular and charismatic as King, when he suddenly took a very, very strong stand and condemned the Vietnam War. He did that at the Riverside Church in New York exactly 1 year before his death on April the 4th. Anyway, but not only that, what he also focused on during the last year of his life was equality when it came to wealth redistribution between the rich and the poor, to make a balanced situation there as well. And this freaked people out in I mean, rich people and people in power position and so on.
Yes.
But it, because what it did was that not only was he aiming at the black population, African American population, but now suddenly we had the poor white population, we had Latin Americans, we had Chinese, we had Native Americans and so on. So suddenly this sort of front or whatever you want to call it widened immensely. And he was also planning what was called the poor man campaign, a march where they were, the plan was to get thousands and thousands and thousands of people walking or going to Washington and camp outside the White House until changes were made.
Yeah.
And that would have just sort of blocked the capital city and so very, very intense time. This was
absolutely.
Also
he was going for non-violent non-compliance, wasn't he?
You know, that was the thing. He was following Mahatma Gandhi's plan totally. And these two people are the two that I hold very, very high. Mm-hmm. Both incredible souls and very, very brave. And unfortunately, both of them died for the same reason as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so that was the reason why he was targeted was that he was in the center of many, many different other groups that was both violent. There were Black Panthers. There was all kinds of different movements. But Martin Luther King, especially after he received the Nobel Peace Prize, became the center figure in the whole thing. And so by eliminating him, the hope was to get the whole attack sort of on the establishment to deflate. And one of the people that really, really, really hated Martin Luther King was J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI. He had had him under very, very strong surveillance since the late 50s, and they had done everything they could to destroy his reputation, to threaten him, to try and force him to commit suicide, to all kinds of things, and they had him under wiretapping, the surveillance.
But then wasn't it Hoover that stepped forward and said that he would be the guy to investigate the whole thing? So it's a bit like here in Ireland where the ombudsman are police anyway, investigating the police.
So, but this is standard.
Yeah.
This is standard procedure. The people carrying out the crime then are in charge of the investigation.
Yes.
And commissions that will follow. Mm-hmm. You know, this is standard because they need to be in control. And so that's how they carry it out.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, it just that Hoover, you know, was going out of his way to really mess up, Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and all around him. And then as soon as the assassination took place, he was the man heading up the investigation.
And, what else is new?
Exactly.
Anyway, they had been planning to take him out for quite a while because, in the late, 1966, there was a series of meetings where they were trying to find somebody who would work well as a patsy. I believe there was more than one option, but one of them was James Earl Ray, who was like a low-life criminal, not very bright, but somebody that could be used as a patsy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when that decision was taken, then a money transfer was done through Clyde Tolson, which was number two in the FBI, and also J. Edgar Hoover's alleged lover.
Okay.
So, sorry?
I said, okay, right.
Yeah, this is what the mob had J. Edgar Hoover by the balls. Literally,
by someone else had it by the balls,
intimidating
right.
photos of the two together and so on.
Similar to what people say that they have on Obama.
But it's the same, Sean. History keeps repeating itself.
It does,
you know,
it does.
I don't want to say this about Obama, this exact thing, but history has an incredible way of repeating itself.
Indeed.
Anyway, so Clyde Tolson was given $25,000 that he transferred to the so-called Dixie Mafia in Memphis, where a man called, where the godfather of the Dixie Mafia, Russell Atkins, he was given these $25,000. He then transferred them to the jail, and gave them to the warden that then arranged for James Earl Ray's escape. So he was let out more or less, and from then on, for more about a year, he was sort of had controllers and guided him through a lot of different movements, while using him, also preparing him as a patsy. And one of the people that were controlling him was a mysterious man called Raoul, a CIA operative that was controlling him and preparing him to take the fall further on. But anyway, just like before the JFK assassination, there were meetings taking place, calling in the same players as in the JFK assassination. And there were one of these places where there was a meeting in upstate New York where the mob's boss from Chicago, Sam Giancana, came with his middleman, Johnny Rosselli, both of them deeply involved in the JFK assassination, and also meeting with FBI and CIA people, people from the CIA, most probably E. Howard Hunt, that was also deeply involved in the JFK assassination. He offered Sam Giancana $1 million to carry out the assassination, but Giancana turned it down for some reason. I don't know why, but he did.
Okay.
Anyway, so also 3 weeks before the killing of Martin Luther King, J. Edgar Hoover held a series of meetings with people involved in the CIA, the military intelligence, and people involved in the Phoenix operation in Southeast Asia. And the guy that was at that time head of this operation Phoenix was a man called Ted Shackley, which was later the head of covert operation for the Western Hemisphere. But he was also deeply involved in what was called Operation 40, which I believe that we have spoken about this ultra secret hit team.
We have, we have indeed. And I want people to check the previous interviews with you, Ollie, on outofthebagradio.weebly.com. Check Ollie's interviews.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, because the 3 people that were leading this hit, very high level hit team, was Ted Shackley, David Attlee Phillips, and E. Howard Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here we are back to the same players again. But when Giancana turned it down, it seems like the contract instead went to Carlos Marcello, the mob boss in Louisiana, also deeply involved in the JFK assassination.
Mm-hmm.
And through him, it went down to a local mobster called Frank Liberto. Liberto then contacted a man, a former police officer called Lloyd Jowers. And he had a small little restaurant called Jim's Grill near the Lorraine Motel where King was later shot. But he asked him to help find people to take part of this plot. And Jowers then accepted it. He was given $100,000. And he then started looking for participants in his circle of friends, former police officers and police officers. And there was a series of meetings that took place at this Jim's Grill. And participants included Earl Clark. He was Lieutenant Earl Clark. He was a hunting buddy. There was a man called John Barger. He was also a former partner. Another Memphis police officer called Frank Strausser. And yet another one called Merrill McCullough, who was an undercover Memphis police officer, but also paid by military intelligence, FBI, and later, after the assassination of Martin Luther King, he became the first black full-star CIA operative. So there was also this mysterious Raoul took place of these meetings as well, and he supplied the weapon that was supposed to be used, as well as another man that Lord Jowers did not know, but I believe could very well be E. Howard Hunt.
So
anyway, we're getting close to the assassination itself,
okay.
And Memphis was not a place where where Martin Luther King was going really, but there was a big strike going on. called I Am a Man. It's it was where the sanity work has started striking.
So sorry to cut across you, Ali. So is it not true then that the Memphis Hotel, the Lorraine Motel that he was in, is it not true that that was a regular haunt? I mean, they even apparently called the room the King Room that he was in, because he booked
it so
often.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, so that's
absolutely
a lie. That's Wikipedia lying to us.
I don't know, but it's not true, because he normally stayed at the Holiday Inn Hotel.
Yes. Okay.
But because Hoover knew that, he went out in national media about a few weeks before and started really ridiculing, making, you know, ridicule of Martin Luther King, saying, here this leader is there saying to all the black population, you should boycott businesses owned by white people, and then he stays at the Holiday Inn. And that indirectly more or less forced Martin Luther King to change hotel to the Lorraine Motel, which was owned by a black couple.
Uh-huh.
And this was quite a famous hotel, because there weren't that many just for black people. But this was like a place where Aretha Franklin, B.B. King, Nat King Cole, these type of people used to stay there. So it was the obvious option when if you didn't want to stay at the Holiday Inn one. So they indirectly forced King to go there. Anyway, just before, about 48 hours before the assassination, all video and audio surveillance suddenly was called off by J. Edgar Hoover personally. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, with many of these false flag operations and other hit teams, suddenly the CCTV cameras go dead, the communication, the phone lines go dead, everything. And also, just moments after the killing, after the shots were fired, the police radio stopped transmitting, according to one of the, Ed Reddit, one of the police officers in Memphis that day.
That is interesting, yeah.
Oh, it's the same. It's the same pattern again and again.
Yeah.
Okay, so on the last day of his life, Dr. King spent most of his time with Dr. Ralph Abernathy of the SCLC. There was also Reverend Andrew Jung from the SCLC. And they had arranged or scheduled for a barbecue with a local pastor called Reverend Samuel Billy Kyles. But what happened on the day before the assassination, he had been booked for room 202 on the ground floor. That was the place that was being used, because there was no possible to, out of security, there was no dangerous angles. It was a very secure room where the limo, or it was actually a funeral car he used in Memphis. They could just reverse it close to the door. He could go in and out without a lot of exposure. But the day before, somebody in the King group from Atlanta called and made a change so that the room was changed to 306, which was on the second floor with a balcony on top there, totally exposing him for sniper fires and so on. The owner, his name was Walter Bailey. He was totally against this. He said, please, you can't do this. This is totally against all security rules. But the other party insisted that was what should be done.
So somebody knew something, Ollie.
The thing is that now, through William Pepper, it's been proven that the day before, when they found out that King had booked on the ground floor, the godfather of the Dixie Mafia, his wife received a call saying, you need to get King up on the second floor. So she called somebody that they used, that the mob used a lot, called O.C. Evers, and he then called Jesse Jackson. According to one witness that was standing next to it, O.C. Evers was instructed to call Jesse Jackson and see to that this room would be changed.
So Jesse Jackson has something to do with the assassination?
I would say very much so.
Okay.
This gets really ugly, I tell you.
Doesn't it just? Yeah, go on.
Anyway, so also what happened on the morning of April 4th, the day that he was killed, all the security was pulled back. Normally he had it like a black bodyguard, a group of police officers, black officers, that voluntarily was there 24 hours a day. They stood, you know, two by the doors. They followed him everywhere. But this day, all of them were called off. You know, they were sent to different areas away from the whole thing. Same with the fire station that was located right opposite the Lorraine Motel. The people, the black officers and firemen and so on that was working there, all of them were pulled back. And there was a number of police cars that also were circulating the block where this motel was. But they, in the morning of the April 4th, were all pulled back five blocks. So this whole thing, I mean, all security was just taken care of so that he was left totally alone. And it's the come forward now that the person that ordered this security detail to be pulled back was Reverend Samuel Billy Kiles. So we're going to come back to this Reverend Samuel Billy Kiles as well, because this is another person where that was surrounding the inner circle of Martin Luther King, where this had been infiltrated by traitors who were there and taking part of the assassination, if I'm correct.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, so not only were there planned that he would be shot by a sniper, this sniper was positioned in the bushes right opposite the Lorraine Motel, in front of the boarding room where James Earl Ray was instructed by this Raoul to rent a room on the second floor. He had no idea that he was being set up and so on. So he had instruction to go and buy a certain rifle and so on. And he was also instructed to buy a white Mustang and do different things. But he was not even in the room when the shots were fired. But not only were there one sniper, the one that actually shot him, but there were also two sniper teams from the 11th Military Intelligence Group. The 11th, 111th Military Intelligence Group from Fort McPherson in Atlanta, Georgia, they had him under surveillance. They were stationed on top of the fire station right in front of him. But there was also another two teams of snipers from the Alpha 184 group that was positioned on top of a water tower, on top of a high building nearby, and inside the cafeteria of the dormitory of the fire station. So not only were there one shooter positioned in the bushes, but also the whole thing was like a triangular fire, which is also standard in these operations as well.
It's quite incredible, quite incredible stuff. So we're getting there, aren't we?
Yeah, for sure. Now, there was a waitress working at the Jowers boarding house. She was ordered not to deliver food to the second floor this day, meaning that King, who was staying there all day, was very hungry in the evening. And the whole idea was that they wanted him to be out on the balcony at a specific time. And that time was 6 o'clock, when he was supposed to go to a barbecue in the home of Reverend Samuel Billy Kiles, the same person again. So what happened was that then...
Was he running late for this barbecue then and stayed back at the house?
No. Reverend Samuel Billy Kiles, he almost created a career after the assassination as one of the people who spent the last hour together with Dr. King. He was standing next to him when the shots were fired and so on, and he's been treated like a hero or a saint and so on. But I tell you, it's very ugly what has come forward around this guy.
Okay.
Anyway, He said that he was in the room together with Abernathy and King the last hour, but Ralph Abernathy says absolute lie, he was not there. And also the surveillance team that were, had the Lorraine Motel under surveillance, in their list they wrote that he arrived 10 to 6, knocked on the door, said it's time to go, and you know, so he was not in the room that whole hour. And in all of these interviews where he's talking about what they were talking about this last hour, so absolute not true.
Right, okay. So caught out in a lie, obviously.
Yeah, you can say that again. Mm-hmm. And also there was a group that was working together with Martin King. They were called the Invaders. These were not non-violence. They were with weapons and everything. And they were staying at the Lorraine Motel as well. They were helping with the Poor People's March. But just an hour or so before the shots were fired, somebody came to the room and said, you need to leave, you need to leave now. And they were like, well, why? We paid, everything is booked. No, you need to leave. So they were in the process of leaving the property. They were in the cars and so on when the shots rang out. Meaning also that because they were armed, you could have had a shootout, you know, that these people would have rushed out and started shooting into the bushes, maybe hitting the sniper and so on. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so according to people in these sniper units, also they were instructed to the only targets that was allowed were people with a tie. People without tie were sacred. And so in the group around Martin Luther King, it's very important to look who had a tie, who did not.
Wow.
One without a tie, Jesse Jackson. One without a tie, reference Samuel Kyles. And actually, the last minute of his life, Martin Luther King was standing up on the balcony arguing with Jesse Jackson about this tie. That he should put on a tie, you know, we've been invited for dinner, come on, dress up. And Jesse was standing down underneath, below the balcony, refusing. And this argument was also what kept him standing there for maybe a minute or so, making a perfect time for the shooter to hit. And a few seconds before the shots were fired.
That really absolutely puts Jesse Jackson into the main man behind the killing of Martin Luther King.
Not a main man, but part of the whole thing.
Well, he couldn't have, you know, luring him there, refusing to wear the tie, having that chat while he's on the balcony and keeping him there till he gets shot.
It gets worse than this.
Go, sorry.
Anyway, so his driver said, it's a bit chilly, maybe you should have an overcoat on and so on. So Martin King turns toward Abernathy and said, please, can you get my overcoat? And at that exact moment, boom, a shot rang out. Witnesses saw that the smoke came from inside the bushy area underneath behind the boarding room where James Earl Ray is said to have rented a room and so on.
So not actually from the room, but from a bush near the room. Right?
Yeah, the room itself, it was from the official story said it was from the bathroom, but that bathroom is at an angle where, for one thing, there was a massive big tree right in front of the window. Also, you need to have been left-handed because of the angle, and your elbow would be sort of like pushed into the wall. It's very odd angle, plus that the window could hardly open.
Right,
and the
right.
thing with this tree was that it was there when the shots were fired, but then in the early morning hours of the next day, the tree was cut down, and including all the brush in the brushy area, meaning that the whole crime scene was gone. This was the police, the Memphis police, that said, no, but we wanted to help, so we cleaned the whole thing up.
So for people who say the guy was behind the bush, the following day there was no feckin' bush.
There was no bush, there was no footprints, there was nothing, you know, because the local authorities were given an order to clean it up. They came, did a good job, and thought they were doing the right thing, not understanding that they were totally destroying the whole place from evidence. Mm.
The scene of a crime was obviously not looked after for the very reason that they were the criminals.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
So anyway, the shot hit Dr. King on the right hand side of the face, high up on the jaw.
Broke his
jaw. And made a horrible wound.